enterprising in my surroundings. I'm finding the quietest of states these days. Just representation of storm brewing. Amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change.
Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. I'm so excited for today's show with Ro McGettigan Dumas. This person is unbelievable. Ro is just an absolute phenomenon within the running industry. She's a sports psychologist. She is a certified therapist. In addition to that, she is also an Olympian. She has made the Olympic final in the steeplechase. She's the Irish record holder in the steeplechase. She's a European medalist. This woman can do it all. In today's episode, we're going to dive into just the mental processing, getting ready for race day, and everything involved in that, from the training to getting prepared to put yourself to the limit, what that means for different events, from a 5K to a marathon to an ultra marathon, and what to do just, and, you know, when you're in the starting corral and getting ready for the starting corral and all of the things. But it may have been a while since you entered a race, and we just got to get used to it. And I say this all the time, and so many people who've been on the show echo these sentiments, that racing is something that needs to be practiced. It is a skill in and of itself, and that's exactly what we talk about in this episode. And Ro gives us so many tips to handle race day to the best of our ability. So let's get into it with Ro. Hello, Ro McGettigan. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, I should say welcome back to the show. We do have a podcast that did feature you, but it was part of the last year's Rambling Runner Virtual Summit, which was fantastic. It was so well received, specifically what you did, which was just phenomenal. I'm so excited to get you back on here while you have an illustrious athletic career. What we're going to be talking about now is your current day job, right? The sports psychology piece that you work with so many athletes, not just locally. You're Rhode Islander just like me now, which is really exciting. But just internationally, you work with so many athletes, and I'm so excited to chat with you. What's on your plate currently?
It's, you know, getting my kids back to school next week. Hashtag mom life is still, you know, right there. Three kids, you know, so it's always the number one thing. And then working with athletes. And then I also have an Olympic school program I run in Ireland that I develop as well. So always the juggle with me.
I can imagine. What's the age of the athletes? You have the Olympic school, as you just mentioned. And on a day-to-day basis, what's the age range of the athletes that you work with?
Yeah, so I work with teenagers, like high school athletes, and then I work with, I don't want to put numbers on people's ages, but like, you know, anyone like middle of their life kind of, you know, point. I don't know what you call that, like, you know, 50-year-olds, 6-year-olds.
Masters runners.
Yeah, a little bit. Not too many master's runners, but different people. I'm a licensed mental health counselor as well, so I see a variety of people. But I suppose majority would be kind of younger, high school, college age, and different things going on there. Yeah.
Right. And for all of those groups, races are now back, right? So you have all the way down to the high school athletes, and then all the way up through masters runners like me who are getting ready for a variety of races, especially with this fall coming fast. We have, it feels like, every marathon is now scheduled for fall 2021, even if there aren't traditionally a fall marathon, which is exciting. And I think for a lot of people, really interesting. So I guess a couple things that I wanted to touch base with you, because a lot of people are now in a situation that maybe they haven't been in such in a long time. I guess moving back a little bit, did you notice at the athletes that you were working with, and I know you work with more than just athletes, but did you notice that people approach their running differently during the pandemic? Not that the pandemic's over, it certainly is not, but in the preceding 18 months and maybe you had seen before that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people had to shift, right? Like there was like always this next race, always the next thing. It was always just locked in. It's like, you know, we talk about like what's in your control and what's out of your control. And like, you know, the date for a race is like one of those things that's out of your control is when it is in the calendar. And all of a sudden now, you know, the pandemic threw those things out. You know, even things like the Olympics every 4 years for like ever. And now that, you know, that was cancelled, as we all know, and it was back on then. So there was, you know, it became one of these things of like moving targets. And for athletes who kind of just work to those moving targets, it was weird to have no targets actually for a while. And then people kind of like, how do I motivate myself? Like, what do I do? You know, am I enjoying it? Do I, you know, where is my energy and motivation for doing the effort and doing the work? And, you know, for some people, that was fine. It was a welcome break. Other people kind of felt like, oh, I don't know, I'm just kind of drifting around here a little bit. And without that pointed focus, it didn't have that, create that tension that sometimes people like to have to like work towards a goal. And that's why we know goal setting is effective, right? It does create that motivation and focus and does pull people. They don't always arrive exactly at the goal, but they still have grown a lot, even in that process of working towards something. And, you know, so that was a bit of a loss for people. And there's a grief in some of these moving targets. And I wouldn't kind of, you know, it sounds really light and easy now, but for some people, like, you know, especially high school athletes where it's their senior year, or like college athletes, or just navigating that change for professional athletes as well, that was hard, you know. And, you know, everyone had a different experience in that, I think. There was no rule book for it, right? There was no, oh, you know, the last time this happened, like professional sports wasn't a thing. You know, so everyone was trying to figure it out on the go. And I think this required people to be kind of self-aware and say, okay, like, what do I need right now this year? What do I need to focus on? And, you know, that was different for everybody.
And did it change how you talked to people about goals and goal setting and internal versus external goals?
To be honest, not really, because I think I've always had the philosophy of like, you know, goals on one hand are great, but also goals aren't everything. And that like the process is really important. And the process is actually the main focus. And if we can still focus on the process and enjoying the day to day. And building the kind of puzzle or building the staircase. And, you know, that didn't really change for me. You know, I think that's actually helps people perform and arrive at their top of the staircase or arrive at their goal. Even, you know, so taking that goal away, the process didn't change too much. But I do appreciate that there's like a balance of that. It's not all just process, process, process. And we do like to, you know, achieve goals, and we do like to hit these markers and things like that. I know that we can kind of hold space for both of those things. And so it didn't change too much, because I think the philosophy behind kind of the kind of mindset or work I do, bringing kind of that focus and helping athletes focus on that, didn't change too much. But, you know, I think it's okay to say like we missed, and people miss having goals, and they like having goals, and that motivates them too. There's no judgment on, you know, the fact that goals are helpful, and it is good to have goals. So.
Yeah. And then it's often, I think, you know, when people talk about motivation and the motivation required to do something really well, but something that's still a hobby, right? Because a lot of people that you're talking to, some of them are professional runners and things like that, but a lot of them, especially the people who are listening to this show, they do run, they're active in the running community, and sometimes extremely active, and they are devoted, and they're all of those things. And yet it's still, you know, quote unquote, a hobby for them, right? It's outside of the professional landscape and something that they're choosing to be a part of. There's not going to be, you know, financial repercussions if they choose not to do it anymore. In fact, maybe they'll save some money if they stop signing up for races. But from a motivation standpoint, how did you see some of that ebb and flow when you have the external piece taken away? And all of a sudden, maybe for some folks, they have a different set of things that they're looking out for, and different things that they're internalizing in regards to their own performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kind of people have to look at, like, you know, what is it? Why do they want to do that race, or what is it they're trying to achieve? And, like, you know, when you kind of get in touch with the reasons, like, what is it behind that? And that, again, is different for most people, but it's usually, it's kind of like a version of themselves, or it's like, kind of reach their potential, or feel this certain way, or, you know, like, you know, we can keep going, but, like, there's a lot of those answers to the question, like, why do you want to achieve that goal, or why do you still want to do that? That tells you a lot about somebody, right? That tells you, you know, if you think about it yourself, like, you know, what was a goal that you had, and, like, why is that important to you? You know what I mean? I don't know if you feel like answering that or not, but, you know, an example of somebody, I don't want to just, I could give examples, but I'm just wondering if you wanted to share that, you know, we could, like, even explore, like, you know, what was it about that? And I think that why tells us a lot, right? And then, you know, that has to shift for people. Some people did do the virtual races and want to still achieve their goal. And, like, there was something about the times and stuff that they wanted to get. And that's, like, they own that. That's intrinsic reward. And the fact that, you know, things moved online, or they didn't get a medal or whatever, like, that's kind of secondary, really, you know, for some people, and that they're still getting what they wanted out of it. And I think that's always important to do, if the race is virtual or it's happening or not.
Yeah, I think for me, the times where I have felt the most content with my running is kind of not necessarily connected to my fitness from a general perspective, right? I mean, there are times where I'm really happy with how things are going, and that aligns with being pretty fit because things are moving in that direction, and then they're just kind of like along parallel paths. But at the same time, I think ultimately, especially from a race perspective, for me, it's like, what happens in that last, like, 1 or 2% of the race? Did I give in, or did I push through, or did I fall somewhere in between? But usually it's kind of one or the other. I think for most people, they get that black and white choice late in a race. And maybe if you're an ultra runner, you get it many times in a race, of like, all right, am I going to push through this discomfort, or am I just going to give in, be like, it was good enough, right? And then start to rationalize it. And then for me, that's not necessarily connected to how fit I am or even what my time was, right? Because if even from the time perspective, and I think we've seen this with virtual running as well, is it's so dependent on the course for certain things, right? Like, if I go run this super hilly 5K and I'm like, oh, what was my time? Well, it doesn't matter what my time was. I had a 300-foot climb in the last mile. Like, my time wasn't that great, but it doesn't matter. Like, you compare it to a flat course, but I could get just as good of a feeling of the experience if when things got tough and I'm like, no, I'm not going to give in. I'm going to keep pushing. And I think that for me, that kind of also boils down to, like, why I try to do this, is try to get the most out of myself within the constraints that I have in my life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think you're right on there. But, like, sometimes people say that, like, oh, you know, I don't care about the time, it's a hilly course. And then they see their splits and then they go, oh my God, this is terrible. And then they, like, actually do care about that, right? And then they, like, feel terrible about themselves. And the target moved, like, they go into the race, oh no, it's just about me, you know, pushing my edge. And then they come out of the race and go, oh God, no, it's so right. And then they're so shamed about, embarrassed about the time. And it's like, wait there, you can't move the targets on yourself as soon as the race goes off. Like, that's not fair. You know, a lot of people do that to themselves. I notice they're like, oh no, it's totally fine, that's no problem. And then they go in and they're like, oh no, I really wanted to run this and I really wanted to run that. And they're not fair to themselves. So there's a lot of that happens. But, you know, if your thing is to kind of go in and just go, okay, I'm going to embrace the challenge of this race, and it's got this, like, really gnarly hill at the end, and it's going to just, you know, leave it all out there, you know, then you can go and, like, execute on that and come out and go, okay, did I leave everything out on the course, and do I feel good about doing that, you know? And then you can walk away satisfied. But so many people unfairly, like, switch the targets the second the gun goes off. I'd love people to stop doing that to themselves. It's not fair.
No, that's so true, right? Especially if we recognize someone in the race, or like, oh, hold on. I know that person. I know what happened last time I raced against that person. Yeah, it's funny. I think like I've run long enough from I'm not a professional, but I've been doing this for a while, on and off now for 25, 30 years, that like I can like look back and be like, oh, if only I was as fit as I was in 2016, right? Just a random year. But then I can go back and remember like, yeah, but after that 5K, you were angry that you didn't like get a certain time. So like, it's easy to like look back with rose colored glasses. But at the same time, when I was in that race, I didn't feel the way I feel looking back on that experience.
Yeah, that's good. And it's good to kind of, you know, call yourself out on that and not, you know, those rose tinted glasses and go, yeah, but were you really happy then? You know, or like, you know, checking in and say, you know, was it the time that I was motivated, or was I, you know, was it the fitness? You know, things change and people's reasons for running are always changing. Like I remember I was at one of Lauren's retreats and they're like, why do you run or something? And like, I remember before, like I used to run for one reason, it was like high performance and that was it. And like, I had since retired and I like had realized I was like these like 99 other reasons why I ran. And it was like really fun to be like, oh, I don't run because of that one reason anymore, but I have like 99 other reasons. And it was such a nice kind of like gift to be like, oh, I thought it was over. Oh, no, it's not. It's just like, it's just shifted. It's just changed. And I think like, you know, if you think about the example you just gave, like, you know, a few years ago, you're like, oh, I always loved to be as fit as I was then. But then you really wanted to hit times and that was your focus and that was your goal. And being fit was like the kind of secondary thing. Like you got to be fit because you were chasing a certain time. Do you know what I mean? That was like the residual effect of like going towards and aiming for those times.
Hey folks, let's talk about vacation races. So vacation races host half marathons, ultra marathons, and trail running festivals at national parks around the country and week-long running adventures all around the world. These global adventures offer daily 7 to 12K trail runs in the morning and afternoon activities that include high adventure things like glacier treks, zip lining, whitewater rafting, or cultural activities like wine tasting, falconry, historic tours, cooking classes. These things, they offer just such a wide range of things. If you're worried about pace, don't be. They require runners to maintain around a 20-minute mile pace. So as long as you're basically moving with purpose, you're going to be just fine. These adventures are all-inclusive, which means hotels, in-country transportation, meals, drinks, activities, and swag are all covered in the trip, and they just announced their full 2024 calendar, which you're going to want to check out. Again, I know we just started 2023, but you got to plan these trips way in advance, and that's exactly what they're trying to do. They have 11 different destinations. Examples are like Alaska, Costa Rica, Croatia, Ecuador, Iceland, Ireland, Japan, New Zealand, Patagonia. So many. It really is remarkable. You can go check them out at vacationraces.com. New customers can use Rambling 200 for $200 off any global adventure trip that is not currently sold out. Also, you can use code Rambling15 for 15% off any of the half marathons or ultra marathon adventures that are not currently sold out. So remember, it's code Rambling200 for the global adventures and Rambling15 for 15% off the half marathon or ultra marathons. Right. And I think that performance, what I've learned about myself is that when I get fit by chasing times, that can go well. But at the same time, it's a really rocky road because then it's like every workout gets put under a microscope because I'm so time focused. As you know, it's like, all right, if I want to do this because I want to get this certain time, then time becomes this, you know, this constant metric that is of such high importance, as opposed to being like, no, like, I'm like, no, I want to do this because this seems like a really interesting experience, or like, this is an adventure. Again, it might not change. It might not even change the workouts I'm doing. Never mind the effort I'm putting into them. But I feel like it changes how I put it into the larger context of what I'm doing. Like right now, like I'm going to do the Richmond Half Marathon in November, and I'm running CIM in December. And last time I did a marathon was over 10 years ago. I didn't do any marathons in my 30s. I'm 40 now. So I'm really excited about those. But it's funny how even in my second marathon, I did a really good job following the plan, but I was very much like in the plan, very on top of the times, where now I'm kind of like, I'm just going to go out there. I'm going to work out every day. I just want to make these it runs fun and interesting. And I know that if I do them, I'll be ready to run the race. But I feel like it's altered the focus. And I think that part of that is what's been going on for the last 18 months and putting some of that stuff into perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the thing of the chase and times, like, I think there has to be, it's so hard to kind of get that balance right, because the times with the watches and all that now are like constantly giving you like splits and data and da 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 da, too much data, if you ask me. And like the days where you're supposed to be checking in on your time and are you like, you know, getting closer to that kind of goal pace and are you starting to see improvements in fitness? Like literally that should be like twice a week. But unfortunately with the, you know, all of the phones and the watches and stuff, we're able to check every like step of the way, and that's too much. So like chasing times then becomes this like stressful thing of like constantly analyzing. And like that can rob so much joy for people. And then, you know, force people to like do paces that they don't actually feel like doing that day. Like I know I fell into that trap when I got one of those watches. It's like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing an easy run. I'm like, oh, really? I read like Paula Radcliffe runs are easy runs at this pace. Like, why am I so slow? And then it's like, oh, and then like that easy run where you're supposed to be like recovering is like full of cortisol and stress and like feel bad about yourself. And it's like, you know, I think that we have to like kind of keep those things in check and recognize, okay, when are the days I'm going to check in on that, those times? When are the days that I'll, you know, use that as like feedback? And when are the days I'm just going to get the work in? And I feel like that is the hardest thing for athletes to do, because we're all ready to kind of go hard and like do the work, but you can't actually do that every day running. So like when you're chasing your times, like you're saying, like you end up kind of analyzing it all, but like actually there's a lot of time where you're not supposed to be analyzing it at all. You're supposed to be just going by feel. You're supposed to be just relaxing out there. And I find that really hard to do. And I see other athletes finding that really hard to do. It's like you're on or you're off. And actually there's a sweet spot there that like most people can't really get the right balance of. But the people who do know exactly what I'm talking about. They know when to work hard and they know when to ease off, and they can keep the sustainable journey, keep it going for a long time.
I know, right? The watch can be, you young kids, so you know this deal. The watch can basically be like going on a car ride with a little kid who keeps asking you like, how far left do you have to go? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like, no. Knock it off. This is making the trip a lot longer. I feel like the watch can be that. It's funny because like you have to almost have two different mindsets. It's like on a workout day, the watch is like helpful. It's like, all right, I want to make sure that I'm hitting the kind of paces / effort levels that I'm thinking about. And where am I in here? Again, it's always about a range. It's not about a number. But then like on the easy days, it's like, all right, no, I want to make sure I don't overcook this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's kind of I need to make sure that like I don't, you know, like there's no such thing as too slow, but there is a too fast. So I'm going to use the watch in that context to make sure I'm not like, you know, stepping on the gas a little bit too much here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or, you know, like I was saying before, like I used to be like, oh, no, it's fine. Go as easy as you want. And then be like, gosh, that's really slow, though. Like, you know what I mean? It's hard to like turn that judgment off. Like, and like I always say, you can't unsee, like your mind knows, even if that watch is on silent, it knows, it sees the thing. And it's like, you can't unsee, especially that piece of your brain that like parts of us that love the data and want to analyze the data and do bring judgment to the data. It's really hard to turn that off. It's part of you. So it's like, for me, it's just like you have to get rid of the watch in order to get rid of that. Even though I'm aware that it's like not, it's supposed to be in charge that day, it still can kind of sabotage the effort and what's supposed to be there.
Right. Right. Yes. It's kind of like making sure that just because something can be measured doesn't mean it matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or you just don't overanalyze it all, you know, and it takes the focus like, oh, how do I feel internally to like, well, now I'm bringing judgment to that, you know, and that's the mistake there.
All right. Well, let's talk about race days because they're coming back. And one of the things that is a huge difference for a lot of people between even a really hard workout and a race is the part that I was kind of touching on earlier. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as an athlete and someone who is a therapist and works with so many athletes. Is that final like 1%, 2% where in a race, it's just different than a workout, where you're really trying to blast through any and all limits. You don't want to hold anything back in that. You really want to, you know, just go all, whatever trope you want to throw out there, we'll collect the ball and put them into what I'm trying to say. But ultimately, with that, with races now back, let's talk about the process of bumping up against limits during race day and pushing past them. Because I think a lot of people probably haven't done that in a long time. And it can be really intimidating and or, you know, fear inducing once you're at that point in a race if you haven't done it in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about it, you're like trying to push your body to its max, right? You're trying to like kind of find that line and ride that line as long as you can, right? So there's going to be feedback from your body being like, oh, please don't do this. Like, this is tiring, right? Like, you're going against like natural forces being like, why are we wasting all this energy? Like, conserve, you know, like, this feels painful. I don't like this. Like, right? So you're kind of going against your own biology in that way. Like, you know, and then at the same time, there is no threat in the environment. So you're kind of trying to ask it to do something just for like fun and pleasure and like, you know, achieve, you know, all your potential, right? Maximize your human experience or whatever. So it's kind of like, if you look at, I always am interested in like biology of like, you know, why, you know, how, what are the forces we're working against in that, right? That like, so instead of being an enemy or your body being an enemy or the limits an enemy, you kind of again get more curious around like, yeah, like your body's going to try and protect itself. It's going to try and stay safe. And that's important, right? So, you know, are you hydrating enough? Are you resting enough in the meantime? Are you like being self-compassionate in this journey and not just punishing your body? And like getting your body on board with the plan as much as you can, and saying, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to like, going to like push this, they're going to use a lot of energy and like, you know, really taking care of yourself. So it becomes this like joyful experience instead of just another like punishment that doesn't feel good. And like, that's demotivating for you, you know? So it's kind of knowing, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to try and find that line. And then when it shows up, I'm going to try and navigate, like, is this pain or is this just like, you know, is this just resistance, you know, and navigate like, you know, what's safe in that environment? Like, you know, like, is it just fear or is it just your body going, oh, this just does not, this is yucky. This doesn't feel good. Cause I don't know. I haven't been in touch with pain in that way. Like my muscles are like, what is this? Right. So it's kind of just, you know, navigating that in a way of like getting curious at what is popping up. What, you know, is it just, because you haven't been in that situation, and then kind of recognizing, okay, every time you know, go back to another race, you'll be able to push that back a little bit further, especially if you come out of it in a positive way and, you know, say, okay, this is the line, like my first race and how long the line is here, right? That's what I always going to say, like the first race, no expectation. You go out there and you say, okay, where am I at? And then when you get that line, then you start to say, okay, how do I start to make an adjustment from this line? Because, you know, you need that line to like, to make the next goals. But you also know that like that line is kind of going to be pushed back just with the desensitization to the like, the pain of the race or whatever it is.
No, it's interesting because I think when you talk about like that line, it can mean different things for different length events, right? Depending on, say, there's just one runner we had in mind and that person was running a 5K versus running a half marathon. That line could mean means two very different things in those kinds of races, right? So if say someone's doing a shorter race, a 5K, or they're a high school cross country runner, maybe they're even running less than that. That's part of like that line kind of like is like you associate it with like that burning feeling, not only in your legs, but your lungs, they're heavy breathing, you're completely redlining, and that pain can be kind of all encompassing from a like your body feels on fire type feeling. Whereas you know, more of an endurance event, the half marathons, the marathons and farther, it's more of like that dull pain that just kind of encroaches on you slowly but surely. And then also just kind of like the little niggles we all get. And is this a real discomfort? Is this a phantom discomfort that in 3 miles I'm going to forget about? So let's just talk about the short one first. All right. When you're talking to some of your younger athletes or people who you really go hard after 5Ks, when certainly there are adults who do that, how do you manage that line for that kind of race?
Yeah. So I think, you know, again, kind of it's, you know, going into the race and like, okay, like making it kind of based on what your training's been, like, what do I think, you know, what's a real ballpark realistic kind of aim for that? And then it's like, you know, that line shouldn't really show up for too long. Like, it should be there, you know, maybe on the third mile or so, but like it shouldn't be in the first mile. But, you know, it's kind of going, okay, let's get curious around when is that going to show up? And then being like, oh, it's here now. Okay, this is it. Like, can I just stay with this? We knew this was coming. Can I just like stay efficient, you know, not freak out, not be like, oh, that means I need to slow down or anything like that. That can I just stay with that and embrace that for as much as I can, and recognize that when you start to do that, the next time you're out, you'll be able to do it a little bit further and push it back and push it back. And like, you know, every athlete, that's the difference, you know, the similarities are in between, like, you know, everybody on a road race, elite athlete or mid pack or beginners, it's like, they're all trying to find that line somewhere, right? And, you know, it's like, you don't want it like on the first mile necessarily, but you want to stay, you know, and recognize, okay, it's starting to show up, that you're like kind of staying relaxed around that and saying, okay, I'm feeling like it's building. Can I stay relaxed and embrace this? Because that's what I actually came into this race for, to find that. Right. So it's, instead of being like, oh no, it's here, I need to shut down, it's kind of going, yeah, it's here. Okay. I'm curious around how can I relax and like run with this for as long as I can. And a good kind of like, strategy for that is to try and find some part of your body that is relaxed in that moment. It's kind of like the yin to the yang, like your body's all yang in that moment. Can you find a little bit of yin somewhere and just like, right, find a way to relax into the kind of pain of effort of like the burning 5K effort or whatever. So you're able to just kind of find a way to like sustain and hold that for as long as you can.
And as an athlete yourself, you've experienced this many, many times. And when you're doing the steeple, not only were your legs and lungs burning, but then you're like, oh, great, another water jump. But I feel like I can't even lift my legs. What were some of the things that you would do in that moment where you had to drum up that kind of explosive power when you were fatiguing?
So every athlete's different. But for me, like I'd have to stay like really within myself, like, as in like I had to, like, I'm like, other athletes are endurance, like more endurance athletes, I need to be able to stay relaxed and then finish strong, like, and find that extra gear. Like, everyone's a different type of runner, so it's kind of staying within myself and being able to kind of execute over the last few laps and like finished really hard. My kind of like, I don't know what kind of animal that goes when you hear a bell, but like I can kind of always find that extra gear when you find a bell. I'm like, oh, right. So I'm just able to be more of a competitor. Like if there's a race, I can just kind of find another level. Whereas like, you know, some other athletes are able to just go and like set a pace for themselves and maintain. Like I feel like I need to race in order to get that next level out of myself. So staying within myself, physically feeling relaxed as long as possible was really required until I can see the finish and then can kind of get after it. So, you know, there are different types of athletes though in that regard. Some people, you know, want to just use the watch and just kind of can, that's the thing that motivates them to hold the pace. And they can kind of ride that like harder pace for longer. So it's kind of like, are you more of a racer, like competitor, or are you kind of like to someone who likes to go time trial and like, you know, push yourself and find a rhythm that way? So, yeah, that's my experience in that. Like I had to kind of not conserve energy, but I had to stay within myself, you know?
Right. And then going to the longer endurance events, right? No one gets a second wind at the end of a 5K, right? No one like goes through the fire of like, I'm anaerobic now, my lungs are burning. And then like a minute later, you'd be like, oh, you know what? I went through that bad patch and now I'm going faster. Right. You don't see that as much.
You see somebody sprinting home in the last 200?
Well, I guess I'm removing the finishing kick from that equation. Okay. I guess I was removing kick piece. But like the where it's like, all right, like I'm redlining. I'm going to continue to redline. And then I'm going to get a, I don't know, maybe people do get, I guess I never got a second kick while I was redlining. I got like the finishing where like the central governor is completely removed from the situation and they can just completely let it fly. As opposed to like someone who's running, you know, maybe for an hour, two, three, 4 hours where like they go through a bad patch. They're not anaerobic, but they're going through this bad patch and they get through it. And now they're all of a sudden it feels like they did it mile two, but there was this awkward period of time where things just started to get funky on them.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times you see people say like they kind of just like try to chunk down the race, right? So if you're in a certain mile, it's like run the mile you're in, right? So it's like, okay, like, you know, I'm in mile two and it's kind of sucking right now. Like, can I just stay with this and just, you know, maintain kind of work in my form, just, you know, even step by step, kind of be really present. And then I'm sure with some of the longer races, people kind of need that like dissociation in a way. They just kind of like have to kind of let the miles tick by somehow, and they kind of use different ways, strategies for doing that. And I think, you know, yeah, like people can kind of ebb and flow in some of those races. Like they can have that rough mile and then come back and feel good again. And, you know, I don't know about you, but like, sometimes a lot of, you know, when people look at flow and how do people find that flow where they kind of get in their zone, like having some feedback and chunking down things to like, I successfully did that first mile, second mile, third mile, that actually is a conduit to like people finding that flow of like, okay, I did what I wanted to do in that mile and like ticked a box there, ticked another box there. And then that builds and builds and that can build and build. So, you know, you're better off being super realistic and achieving, you know, over the first half of a race, because that is actually going to help you kind of find all this extra energy, because you're like ticking, ticking, ticking. We love ticking boxes, our brains do. So that's going to help you then the latter half of the race to really kind of let go. And like when you see that finish line, to like release and all, you know, free up all that energy reserve. So, you know, that's making the case of being kind of not super conservative, but being super realistic that you feel like you're being successful over the first part. And I don't know any athlete who hasn't found that that is a good strategy. Do you know anyone who goes out too hard at the start is just always a recipe for like, okay, good luck. It's like too much. So I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think pacing definitely comes into play, certainly with so many of these races. And it's interesting because some of these people haven't raced in a while. So like, I don't know, the indicator, and maybe if they're not working with a dedicated coach, they're kind of like, they're going through the race calculators, but that's just more general than specific for an individual. And even coaches can be wrong. Because you never know. You never know exactly how fit someone is on race day, because you never know how hard they're pushing in workouts. They might be killing themselves. They might be giving 80, 90%. Maybe they had more in the tank. But especially if it's a remote coach versus someone who's in person, is able to really witness what's going on. But when you're talking to someone, say again, we'll just use the marathon here, who's, you know, they're at mile 18, they're at mile 20. So they're, you know, they've gone through a significant part of the race. But there is still a significant part to go, right? The finish line effect has not happened yet, right? The central governor is still firmly in place, and they're going through that bad patch. And, you know, people who've done this before understand that feeling of like, you feel like the running version of apocalypse has happened. There's no getting out of this. It's all over. I don't know why I'm doing this anymore. Maybe imposter syndrome comes in. It's just that feeling of I am defeated. I need to find an exit out of here. When someone's going through something like that, how would you advise them to think and talk to themselves to get through that patch so they can get through to the other side, which can be a really interesting path, and you never kind of know what's on the other side once you've done it a couple of times?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's hard to kind of give such a broad, general kind of statement, because everyone has a different, like, you know, thoughts pop up in that moment, right? And like you said, like, you know, some people, you know, are having, you know, thinking this and thinking that. And like, you know, the one thing is to kind of know like that this is something that you did sign up for, right? So to find that place is something that you actually chose to do willingly, right? So there's just like, choosing that, there's something really important around that. Like, this is not life-threatening, you know, that this is something I chose to do, right? I chose to, like Lauren says in the computer, and like come in contact with those dragons that are lurking within, right? The dragons are going to come out in the last 6 miles or whatever, right? So you knew they were going to show up. So if you know that there's like a normal one of like, oh, you know, you're slow, or you're like these like old thoughts that you hear over and over again, these and automatic negative thoughts that you've just been hearing for like your whole life, you know that they're going to show up. So actually having a plan for that is actually important. Like, say, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like, you know, what's a normal one, but just like, oh, you shouldn't have done this in the first place, or who do you think you are, or whatever it is. Right now, you know, what's likely to kind of come out in the negative thinking part of it. And then you can kind of remember, okay, now why did I sign up for this again? Like, what was this? And that's why the getting clear on that kind of even going in, I recommend people on race day, like I talk about in the journals and in the Believe Training Journal series, that like writing down on your race plan, like, you know, yeah, the logistics of what you want to do, and then like some key goals for the race and like different scenarios that you're going to come across. But it's no surprise to anyone who's run the marathon that the last 6 miles is going to be hard. So it's not, take the shock out of it. You know that's going to happen. So it's like, what's your plan for when that shows up? Right. So it's literally having a plan for those miles and going, okay, what's the thing that's going to help me endure that, this physical, mental, emotional test? And usually having that like really strong purpose, right? So many people run for charities, so many people run for, you know, things that are just bigger than them, or like really purposeful things, or like, you know, I don't know, if they've been through some kind of a personal crisis or, you know, an illness or something, that this is like, this is feels more than just like about pace or random like race results. Like there's a purpose there that's going to help them persist in testing time. And I think not being shy about that and having that really clear and vocal. And you see athletes now, like, you know, they write stuff in their hands, or they write stuff on, you see athletes pulling photographs out of their shirts after they win medals at the Olympics. Like, you see people writing stuff on their shoes. It's like, it helps them kind of remember, you know. Meb talks about like, he wrote people's names on his numbers, you know, that these are the people he's like carrying with him in those tough times. Like, this is why he's doing this. This is, you know, These are the things that are going to help to ground the people and center them and like keep the purpose strong when the doubts and the dragons are to full effect.
Yeah, I really appreciate everything you just said. It was really interesting. One thing I want to follow up on first is the idea of visualizing it when it doesn't go perfect, right? When not perfect, that's not the right word. I guess visualizing the difficulties. Because oftentimes, and it's a kind of a popular trope of like, all right, let's visualize the perfect race. But the perfect race doesn't come without difficulties. It doesn't come without exhaustion, right? Yeah. Lord knows, yeah. Right? Because yeah, if your race comes without exhaustion, maybe you left a little meat on that bone. Planning for those things. I remember, I don't even remember when I first heard it, but it was, and it was about Michael Phelps, two or three Olympics ago, how he had prepared for if his glasses broke or his goggles broke when he was in the water. Like, what would you do if your goggles broke for the water? And then, you know, he actually did laps with broken goggles. All right, no, I'm going to count 21 strokes and I know when to flip and things like that. And then in one of his gold medal rounds, what turned out to be a gold medal round, one of the finals, his goggles did break. And he had planned for that. It was supposed to be like, no, I'm going to focus on something, on perfection, and that's how I'm going to magical think my way to that experience.
Yeah. And actually, the research shows that like when you do anticipate obstacles, when you set goals, that actually helps you be more successful in your goals. So kind of, you know, when people go, oh, I get anxious when I set a goal, or like get nervous, I'm like, actually, that's good. Bring that in. Bring those nervous, fearful thoughts into the picture. What are you so afraid of? What do you, oh, you don't have your, you know, water bottles sorted out. Okay, get your water bottles sorted out. You know, You're afraid that might happen. Okay, do you have a plan for that? You know, let the fear speak and show you. I always kind of like the red flags. Okay, let's hear all the red flags, welcome them, and then make a plan for them, right? Oh, it's going to be super hot that day. Okay, what are you going to do about it? Like, you know, are you going to have extra things sorted out? Don't just like shove those fears away and like pretend that they're not there, because they're there. You might as well bring them out into the open and then go, how can you be of service to this goal? And actually, now what am I going to do about that situation? Huh? What am I going to do about that hill on mile 20? Right? Like, what are you? What is it? What is it? You know, when you're centered and you're calm, you've got all your wits about you. What would be a good strategy for that? Right? Not just, oh, in the middle of the race when you're like exhausted and like, you know, you're vulnerable to like everything that like you're going to go, oh, now what am I going to do to figure this piece out? Think of it, use your full capabilities in advance. Don't wait till like the middle of the race to try and figure that stuff out. You know, that's going to show up. You know, you have doubts that show up, you know, the day of the race or the days, the middle of the race or the last mile of a race. Have a plan for those doubts. Get that plan in action. Like, so when they do show up, you're not like, oh no, here it is. It's like, yeah, I'm ready for you. Right? It could be the course. It could be your own internal dialogue. It could be something else. You know, either way, I think have like knowing what's going to show up and then having a plan for it is the way to deal with it.
All right. One last thing I want to talk about, and this isn't purely from a, you know, ROAS therapist. This is more a ROAS therapist and a professional runner situation where you've been on many starting lines in your life, some extremely high profile ones, Lord knows. So people are going to be stepping to the starting line and they're going to be, again, maybe even more nervous, anxious, that overwhelming feeling, right? The feeling of, all right, I pissed 9 times in the last 20 minutes, but I got to pee again. All right. All of that kind of bubbles up and people kind of, it manifests itself differently for certain people. I'm one of those people who like, for some reason, will do way too many strides to get rid of it. And all of a sudden I'm like, uh-oh, I think I'm a little tired now. I should not have done 1200 meter strides to get ready for this race. How do you, again, knowing that every person is different, but understanding that, you know, racing is an experience. It has to be practiced. Getting people ready for, all right, it's 30 minutes before the start of the race. Here are some things that will help you get to the beginning of the race so you're not spending all of your mental and physical and emotional energy before you've even, you know, crossed the chip time.
Yeah. So right straight away, I'd say, like, don't try anything new on race day. Like, what how many strides do you do for your warm-up for your workout?
Yeah, see, I normally do 4.
Right. So you only do 4 when you do your race, right?
I know. I feel like this conversation already made me feel like such an idiot. I'm like, why would I ever do more than 4? Well, that's so stupid.
Because there's so much energy in your system, all that like pent up, ready to go, like nervous energy. There's like recognizing, okay, I'm like, right, that like if you don't have a plan, and this is what, again, I know it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse, but like writing down these things, like they seem so simple, but when it's written down in concrete, like I do 4 strides. Okay, so when you're going to go, oh, I've done 4 now, should I do 2? No, you don't. You do what was written down. You stick to your plan in that way. Do you know what I mean? You don't have, like, the nervous energy is going to make you second guess. Your mind is going to be jumping around like a monkey out there. You kind of go, no, this is what works me. I'm not trying anything new on race day, you know? And then it's like, okay, breathing techniques. It's centering yourself, you know, don't try anything new. And like, you know, I can say that now from a different perspective of, you know, as a therapist now, but like I had to learn these things as an athlete as well. Like I used to get so nervous and stressed at like world-class competitions to the point where like, I can't breathe. I'm looking in the call room. I'm like feeling so stressed at like other athletes. With some sports psychology tools and strategies, I was able to go into call rooms, like looking around, smiling, relaxed to feel like I'm like at a meditation class right now. Because I was able to shift so much internally and relax in that environment. The environment didn't change. Like the environment is what it is. The race day start line is what it is. Your internal reaction to that is what can change and can improve. So it's like recognizing, you know, you don't actually have to be on top of a hilltop to feel calm and centered. Can you feel calm and centered in the kind of hoopla of like the hype of the race and all the like, you know, the music's blasting and everyone's gathering around, can you still find that place in you, like where it's like, I'm calm and centered, this is what I need to do out here? And everyone has the opportunity to learn that and do that. So, you know, and watching that nervous part that's like going to just add on like 10 extra strides and wasting all that energy, just recognize, okay, every time I conserve all that energy, I'm conserving it up. It's like, you know, you want to start the, I always say, you always want to start the race with full bars of mental, physical, emotional energy. So what is it that's going to get the battery full charged on that start line? And don't let any extra energy out before that start line.
Right. Don't walk around all the extra, not the expo. So this is more marathon day before. But the other move I've done is that, like, all right, I'm at the race, but I'm here an hour early. What do I do now? And it's like, don't walk around for the next hour. Just go chill out somewhere.
Yeah. Like, recognize, write down, like, what time are you going to start warming up? What, you know, how long are you going to warm up for? You know, when do you go to the bathroom and get changed or whatever you need to do? When do you sit and relax and just put your feet up and visualize? When do you, you know, start doing drills and strides? When do you go to the start line? You know what I mean? Literally minute by minute for that hour, you should have a plan. Like, I know not to be like super stressed out about it, but like recognizing, no, right now I'm actually supposed to be sitting down, or right now I'm supposed to be going to the start line. So every time you're like, oh, I'm supposed to be somewhere else, I'm supposed to be somewhere else, because that's the feeling on race day. It's like, I'm supposed to be somewhere where I'm not. Actually, no, I'm actually supposed to be exactly where I am right now. And that feels really good to just like know where you're supposed to be and just and be there. So these sound like such simple things, but we all know in race day, it's like, it starts to, like, thinking straight is hard. So like, you know, they sound so simple and basic now, but like, we know when we get nervous, it's like, it's harder to think straight.
And one thing for me was understanding, like, that there isn't a huge difference. And sometimes for me, there is no difference between anxious and nervous and just excited. That sometimes I misinterpret it. Like, sometimes you hear people saying, like, oh, you're not hungry, you're just thirsty. It's like, shouldn't I know the difference between these two things by now? I'm 40 years old. But like, I feel like for me, there are times where I misinterpret those signals, where I'm actually probably more just excited than I am nervous, because there's no like imminent threat here. And I'm misreading it. And then when I kind of reframe it, I'm like, no, but I'm excited, which is great, because then I can use that excitement as, you know, fuel. Again, not that I'm going to blast off the starting line, but that I can make that a positive thing for me as opposed to the opposite.
Yeah, there's usually like a lot of energy in your body in that day. It's like, so kind of naming it right correctly, like you said, like, you know, we know nerve, like they do have similar neural pathways in your body where like it does feel like they're the same areas are kind of lit up in a way. But you can kind of say, yeah, this is appropriate before a battle, right? Because that's what it is. It's kind of like pre-battle, like preparedness, where like your anxiety is a little bit more. It does help focus. It does release all this energy. So name it and go, okay, yeah, this is kind of my battle mode, actually, instead of having to name it, like, you know, pretend that it's not a little bit edgy, or pretend that it's like fully, you know, this is me preparing for battle, and this is going to help me release more energy in my system. So this is, and anxious thoughts come with this territory. If I want the extra energy, I'm going to have to manage the anxious thoughts, you know, and recognize it's normal. It's all normal. That's a big thing, that it's all normal, right? That every athlete is experiencing it. So it's just navigating and not allowing the like anxious thoughts build on top of each other of like, now I shouldn't be anxious and now I shouldn't be this. And then they just kind of build their own staircase.
Right. Like the person who's worried about not sleeping now they can't sleep because they're worried about not sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. The double, in Buddhism, they call it the double arrow. This, where, you know, you could keep going triple, you know, it's just like, you know, it is what it is. And then we'll like add thoughts to that, and it just makes it harder, you know, so.
Well, bro, you are such a treasure. Every time I talk to you, it's such an insightful conversation. Thank you so much for doing this. If people want to, I guess, learn more about the Believe Training Journals, which you and Lauren have done such incredible work with, and to know more about you as a coach, therapist, and just all around inspiration, where can they go to learn more?
BelieveIAm.com is my website. That'd be great.
It's all right there. Bro, thank you so much.
Thanks a million, Matt. Good to see it.
Ro, thank you so much for coming on the show. One thing I didn't mention in the intro is the Believe train journals. These training journals are unbelievable. So many people swear by them. And in the digital world that we live in now with our Strava updates and our GPS watches that automatically go to Strava, which, hey, I'm not going to badmouth it. That is pretty cool. It's pretty nice to have like a little hands-free thing that, you know, does it all, is all the work for us. There is something to be said for putting things down in writing, whatever that happens to be, just the power of it. There are so many studies about this as well. Just the power of pen or pencil in hand on paper, it's legit. And you see a lot of the same studies are, you know, the difference between reading a book versus reading something on a Kindle and the kind of mental processing that goes along with it and the retention and all of that. And it matters. So Believe Train Journals, go check them out. If you want to work with Ro, go to believeiam.com. She's just absolutely phenomenal. In addition to that, I will say I did have the chance to go on an easy run with her several months ago. It was the fastest easy run of my life, but it was so much fun. She is just as warm and awesome in person as she is from afar, and it was an absolute pleasure to get that chance to run with her. Thank you so much for listening, and happy running.